we inform.
Religious freedom is about people of faith being able to live out their faith, live out their convictions, no matter where they are.
We equip.
Sacred honor is the courage to speak truth, to live out your free speech.
We also rejoice in our sufferings because we know that suffering produces perseverance, perseverance character, and character hope.
This is At the Core on American Family Radio.
Welcome to The Core here on American Family Radio. Walker Wildman here with you for this live edition of the program. Days into the Trump administration, and it's Wednesday, January 22nd, 2 days in to the Trump administration, about 48 hours, a little over 48 hours into the Trump administration. And it's kind of refreshing to say the Trump administration, not the incoming administration or president-elect. It's President Trump now. And the 47th administration has begun here in America. So we're going to talk about that this hour. And we'll talk about my visit to the nation's capital, where I was earlier in the week. Let's talk about a few other items before we get to that, though. One thing I want to mention before we jump into our scripture for the day and some other items is the preborn campaign that we're carrying on into this week. We want to make sure we reach our goal. This is very important, not just for preborn ministry, our partner, but also for the moms and the babies that are helped through these ultrasounds. It's just really important that we reach our goal of 4,500 ultrasounds or 4,500 babies that are aided, that are helped through preborn. So that's what we're doing this past week, and we're going to carry it on this week, at least for the time being. Here's what's going on, though. With preborn ministry, preborn's partnering with local pregnancy resource centers, and they're providing ultrasounds for moms and babies in need around the country. $28 provides one free ultrasound, $140 provides five free ultrasounds. If you want to donate, let's say $5,000, that's going to provide 200 ultrasounds. So you can do the math on that. But basically, $28 per ultrasound, and you can choose how many you want to sponsor. But a gift of any amount will help. If you want to just do one ultrasound, that's $28. That's perfectly fine. If you want to do more than that, you can add up the math on how many ultrasounds you want to provide. But it's $28 a piece, and our goal is 4,500. And we're getting close to 4,500, but we're not quite there yet. So let's keep calling 877-616-2396, 877-616-2396. If you want to go to AFR.net on your smartphone, on your desktop device, you can donate there at AFR.net, AFR.net. Right there on the homepage, you'll see the preborn tab, and you can click donate now, and then 100% of your gift is going to go to preborn ministry and go to ultrasounds. So 877-616-2396 or AFR.net, AFR.net. Well, Psalm 145 is where we are this week. I want to read two verses here. Verse 3, great is the Lord and highly, we're in verse in chapter 145 of Psalm, verse 3, great is the Lord and highly to be praised, and his greatness is unsearchable. Verse 4, one generation shall praise your works to another and shall declare your mighty acts. First truth I want to point out in this passage is that verse 3 says that the Lord's greatness is, quote, unsearchable. God's greatness is unsearchable. And that's alluding to the fallibility of man and the infallibility of God. How man is really unable to fully comprehend the things of God. We can to a degree comprehend the things of God, but yet we are not God. And so the writer here is talking about how the Lord's greatness is unsearchable. Other passages talk about how, you know, the words don't express the greatness of our God. verse 4 says, one generation shall praise your works to another and shall declare your mighty acts. So that's talking about transferring the praise of God and the works of God to future generations, which we should do. We should transfer testimonies of the works of God to future generations. That's what the writers of the Bible that were inspired by God, that's why they were writing the Word of God, because they wanted to transfer testimony of God's work to future generations. That's how we have the Scripture. And we should desire to do the same thing in a modern context, and that is to pass the blessings of the Lord and the testimonies of His goodness to future generations, including our children and grandchildren. That's Psalm 145, verses 3 and 4. Our Activate Summit is coming up this summer in June, the 12th through the 14th. It's going to be at Cadence Bank Conference Center here in Tupelo, Mississippi. And we would love for you and the family to join us here in Tupelo for a great, great, great first ever Activate Summit 2025. Our theme is Biblical Bedrock, Building on the Authority of Scripture. If you want to find out any information about our Activate Summit, you can go over to activate.afa.net, activate.afa.net, and you can register there. The pricing is very affordable, $75 for registrants that are 13 and up, because 13 and up are going to be in the main session. If your age is 6 to 12, it's going to be $50, and 5 and under are free for the Activate Summit. Well, turning our attention to some of the stories I want to get to, man, this is a busy news cycle, and this is not going to stop. President Trump is hard at work, staying up into the wee hours of the night working, and we shouldn't be surprised. He told us he was going to do it. So let's just break these down one by one. The inauguration speech, absolutely phenomenal. Absolutely phenomenal. I know Rick feels the same way, because I was on with him during the day of the inauguration on Monday. So the one of the things that stood out to me was the no holds bar approach of President Trump calling out the corrupt establishment that went after him and went after his family while giving the inaugural speech. It was phenomenal. And Scott Jennings, who's become this excellent CNN commentator, conservative commentator, who makes the liberals' head spin, he said, he called this was, Trump wasn't basically indicting the gangsters in his speech in the rotunda. So let's listen to Scott Jennings on CNN talking about how President Trump just went straight after Biden and Harris and Obama in the rotunda.
I thought this was an incredible speech, honestly, and truly watching Donald Trump indict these gangsters to their faces while they had to sit right in front of them in that intimate setting in the rotunda for Republicans was remarkable. They had to sit there and take it just minutes after Biden, who we're looking at here, pardoned his entire family. I mean, it was glorious. By the way, I love the rotunda setting. I thought it was regal.
Scott Jennings said Trump just indicted all the gangsters to their faces in the rotunda. I mean, this is beautiful. The speech was better than the first, to be honest. And the first was pretty good. But this was excellent. It was excellent. And the prayers were well done. Carrie Underwood knocked it out of the park. Completely a cappella because the music wasn't working. And going into the inauguration, within minutes of going into the inauguration, President Biden pardoned himself he pardoned his entire family. Now remember, these are the good guys, quote. These are the innocent guys. These were the pillars of democracy and decency and American greatness, and he had to pardon them. By the way, the blanket, this might be a first ever, I'm not sure, but the blanket preemptive pardon It's quite phenomenal. Quite phenomenal. And I haven't heard any legal scholars dispute the viability of it, but it's quite interesting that no crime has been, supposedly, according to Biden, no crime's been committed. They're as innocent as doves. But we've got to do a preemptive blank pardon for the entire family. And he had already pardoned Hunter Biden, by the way. So, and then you pardon Fauci and Mark Milley and Liz Cheney and the entire January 6th committee. To me, it's incriminating in one sense that you have to do blanket pardons for all those people. What did they do wrong? What did they do that we don't know about? Because honestly, when you look at it, I know people don't like what Fauci has done, and I don't like what he's done either. I know people don't like Mark Milley. Now Mark Milley's offense by running backroom negotiations with China and backroom comms with China around the commander-in-chief, that's probably criminal. I don't know definitively. It's definitely against military protocol. Probably violates some type of military standard. Bobby was in the Air Force. He may can speak to this. But Bobby, my point is that whether it's Fauci or Liz Cheney or some of these others, unfortunately, or maybe fortunately, depending on who you're talking about, there's a lot of immunity built up in these bureaucratic positions and these congressional positions where finding a crime while conducting their official duties, even though you don't agree with their official duties, it's a pretty high bar. But the Mark Milley incident, where he admitted that he was running back channel communications with China and others on during the Trump administration, that's a big deal.
Yeah, and he was trying to say that it was preemptive in terms of if President Trump declares war and this, that, and the other thing, which, again, as you alluded to at the beginning of the show, to declare war has to be a congressional act, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
He was a DEI. He put all of his priorities on everything except for the warrior ethos.
Yeah.
Flat out. It was everything else that the administration wanted. He was a yes man. I don't have a great deal of respect for the man, I'll be honest with you.
Yeah. Yeah, and the whole notifying your enemy that you're going to launch a strike on them, well, that's up to the commander-in-chief. And it's not required by law. Yeah. It might be standard practice in modern warfare, but, you know, that's the commander-in-chief's call. So Mark Milley, to think he has the wherewithal and the liberty to do that means he didn't understand his position. Mm-hmm. And there may be things that we don't know about, that whether it be Fauci or Liz Cheney or others have done that we don't know about that might be criminal. I don't know. But the blank pardoning, to me, it's indicting. Yes. It's indicting.
Yes.
Because these, like I said, these positions already come with a lot of, I'm not going to say qualified immunity. That's a law enforcement term, but they do come with a lot of shielding, a lot of protection. I mean, you have to do something pretty overtly illegal and clearly illegal in order to be, investigated and charged criminally. When you work in the federal government. So I just think it was completely unnecessary, unless there's something there that's incriminating that we don't know about, which is my concern. Otherwise, why the blanket pardons? That's the question I have.
Well, the other humiliating aspect of that, as we talked about this morning during the pre-show, is, you know, every picture of Milley was taken out of the Pentagon, which,
yeah,
that
which
alone,
is beautiful.
Oh, it bruises the ego up
yeah,
extensively, for sure.
Absolutely. So that's where we are now. That kind of gets us to 12 p.m. Eastern on Monday, as far as my kind of updating you on my trip. And then we'll bring you up to speed a little bit more in the next segment on some of these confirmation hearings, some of the latest executive orders, some of the latest ongoings with Customs and Border Patrol, ICE, Pentagon, Department of Defense, all that. We'll bring you up to speed on that in the next segment, and some of the more pardons that Trump has done in the first 48 hours. We'll be back in a few.
Hey, our tours for 2025, our spiritual heritage tours of Washington, D.C. and Williamsburg and Boston, they're filling up. They're halfway full now. And we've never had a response quite like this. So what I'm saying is, if you want to go with us this year to either Colonial Williamsburg, which includes Jamestown and Yorktown, or Washington, D.C. and all the sites of our nation's capital, including Mount Vernon, or if you want to go with us to Boston and see the Freedom Trail and all the sites of the greater Boston area. If you want to go on these trips with us this year, it's time to check into the information and register so that you make sure you're on one of our tours, the one you want to go on, obviously. So go to the website wildmongroup.com, WILDMONgroup.com. Hope to see you on one of these in 2025.
At the Core podcast are available at AFR.net. Now, back to At the Core on American Family Radio.
Welcome back to this second segment of The Core. Walker Wildman here with you. The show is hosted each week by myself and Rick Green here on American Family Radio. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast wherever you listen to podcasts over at AFR.net. One thing President Trump hasn't done that he needs to do in pretty short order is pardon the 21 pro-lifers that were prosecuted under the FACE Act by the Biden Department of Justice. This needs to be done. It has to be done. It's possible President Trump does it before the March for Life, which is on the 24th of this month, so just in 2 days. So it's possible President Trump does it in the next few days, but it needs to happen, and it needs to happen in short order. The reason I say that, the reason I think there's momentum for it, is because President Trump has already pardoned 1,500 J6ers. All right, so and it's literally the stroke of a pen. Okay, it's literally the stroke of a pen. This can happen. So President Trump needs to do it. He has to do it. He must do it. Pardon the 21 pro-lifers that have been targeted by Biden. If you want to know more about that at AFA.net, rather, right there on the homepage, you can see our latest action alert on this, asking Trump to pardon these pro-lifers. And I know the Thomas More Society has done a lot of great work on this. They've actually been legally representing many of these pro-lifers, if not all, that were targeted under the FACE Act. Well, that's one thing I wanted to mention on that. Moving on to some more clips and some more content. On the pardons, since we're speaking of pardons, I think the pardoning of the J6ers was excellent. And here's why. Here's my response. The vast majority of the J6ers were targeted by Biden unfairly for nonviolent offenses on January 6, 2021. Okay? That's a fact. And I've actually been interviewing them on this program. Secondly, the ones that were violent, which the word violent is somewhat subjective in modern terms. But the ones who did have maybe scuffles with law enforcement, etc., we've got to remember that they've been locked up for 4 years. Okay? They've been locked up for 4 years. So every one of these that have been locked up, they've already served 3 to 4 years behind bars. Okay, so it isn't as if someone who was confrontational physically or got in a scuffle with law enforcement, it's not as if they didn't serve any time. They got off scot-free. They didn't have to answer for their crime, etc. These guys and women have been behind bars for 4 years. Okay, so that's under the worst context, right? The worst offense, if you will. I think six of them technically had their sentences commuted because President Trump and his team didn't feel the confidence and the level of confidence to pardon them. So they gave them a commutation. So that's that. So 1,500 of those. The media's concern about pardoning J6ers is completely hypocritical, by the way. Because remember who all Biden pardoned and commuted in his final days? Now, some of these were commutations, but murderers. And let's not forget the murderers, the convicted murderers who were on death row, and terrorists, by the way, who were on death row that Biden said, we're not giving them the death sentence. All right. And I don't know where the media was and where the impeachment inquiry was on that. And so let's listen to Senator Mullen from Oklahoma on the hypocrisy of Biden pardoning murderers, including FBI killers, but Trump pardons peaceful protesters, and all the outrage ensues. Clip three.
President Biden changed all this. Remember the 37 murderers that he commuted their sentences? Remember two of them, one that he pardoned, two, the one that he pardoned killed two FBI agents. Another one literally beat an officer to death with a hammer. And another one literally tied up a woman who had accused him of rape, tied her up in duct tape, put a cinder block around her, and threw her over a bridge live. And so you remember that the violence that he pardoned, and I'm just saying you got to compare both of them, Aaron. If you're going to cover the story, cover both stories.
Okay. Now, they're not going to do it, right? They're not going to do it. So, you know, the people that Biden commuted sentences for and pardoned, many of them were very, very bad offenses, very, very bad offenses, including one who murdered two FBI agents. He commuted his sentence. And this is astonishing, the audacity to do this kind of stuff. But that's Biden for you. That's Biden for you. And by the way, he lied on multiple occasions, saying, oh, I'm not going to pardon my family and I wouldn't pardon Hunter Biden. Absolutely not. And what does he do? He pardons them all. He's a liar. He's a liar. And that's why he's not the president anymore. On to more, let's say, positive things. And by the way, the media and the Democrats, they're in a pickle. They're in a predicament. Because they have no momentum. They have no leader. They have no momentum. They have no money. When you've got Bezos, Tim Cook, Bill Gates, although I don't like all these people, but I'm just telling you, when you have all of them hanging out with Elon Musk and Donald Trump, the Democrats are in a predicament, okay? They are. And their arrows and their shots are falling flat. That's why they're now calling us Nazis again, right? Tell me we hadn't been here before, all right? But as far as the groundwork goes, Trump has the momentum. That's a fact. And the media is having a really hard time with this. Because they don't know how to cover Trump, how to talk about his agenda without calling him a Nazi. They literally just don't know how to do it. And I told you after the first assassination attempt, I told you they won't rein it in. That's a fact. I told you they will not rein it in. I'm talking about the Democrats and the media because they don't know how. They have no self-restraint. They have no self-check. Those are the exact words I used. But the president signed a litany, nearly 200 executive orders before midnight on January 20th. One of them designated the cartels as a foreign terrorist organization. Clip four, let's listen.
This is actually an executive order designating the cartels and other organizations to be foreign terrorist organizations.
That's a big one.
Yes, sir.
People have wanted to do this for years. So they are now designated as terrorist organizations, foreign.
Yep.
And Mexico probably doesn't want that.
Who cares?
We have to do.
That's so right. Sad.
They're killing our people. They're killing 300,000 American people a year. Not 100, like has been reported for 15 years. It's probably 300,000.
There you have it. President Trump designating the cartels and other cartel-related organizations as foreign terrorist organizations, which must be done. Now, President Trump, as of today, is ordering the Pentagon to send up to 1,500 active-duty troops to the southern border. They must be armed. If they're not armed, it's a joke. they must be armed. There's no reason special forces are not operating on the southern border, operating in Mexico specifically. Absolutely no reason special forces are not operating in Mexico to take out the cartels. It's a no-brainer. And to think, and to be naive enough to think that we are in a peaceful diplomatic relationship with Mexico, who are you kidding? We're at war with the cartels. We just don't know it. They're at war with us. We're in a bad place. This is not peacetime operations. We are at war with the drug cartels. They run Mexico. The Mexican government is compromised. That's a fact. Ask anybody who has any idea of what's going on down there. So what do you do when violent, militarized organizations have corrupted and compromised a foreign government that borders your border? Well, you go to war with them and you designate them as foreign terrorist organizations, which is what they are. If we want to be honest, some of the things that the cartels do is more violent or as violent as what ISIS does and Hamas does. Whether it's beheadings, dismemberment, rape. You should read up on the initiations, the gang initiations and the cartel initiations that have to be done for many of these young men that want to be a part of the gangs, want to be a part of the cartels. And so this is a major problem. And there's no reason, absolutely zero reason, why we don't have active duty special forces operating in Mexico. I'm not saying we have to go deep in, but we can operate right over the border, no problem, in and out. And if Mexico has a problem with it, well, too bad. They can take it up with the cartels. Too bad. What's Mexico going to do? Are they going to go to war with America? No. So we also have to understand our position on the world stage. We're in control here, okay? Mexico's not going to do anything. And if I were the Mexican government, I would just tell the cartels, sorry, guys, I can't control America. I can't control the U.S. So you guys are on your own. But we know what will happen there. What? The cartels will take out the government. Literally assassination attempts, which they already do anyway. The cartels, yes, they assassinate Mexican officials who don't offer and don't accept bribes and kickbacks. And we're concerned about Ukraine. Focus needs to be on Mexico. Tom Homan knows this. And ICE is not exempting anyone from deportation. Anyone who is here illegally is eligible for deportation, which is a beautiful thing. Let's listen to Tom Homan clarify that no illegal immigrant is off the table when it comes to deportation. Clip two.
What would a person have to do to get a visit from ICE?
For it to be in the country illegally, first of all, I mean, there's nothing in the immigration law that says you got to be convicted of a serious crime to be removed under the INA. So if you're in the country illegally, ICE can visit you.
I love it. In the past, these officials have gone, well, as long as they're nonviolent, you know, they're safe from deportation. No, that is not legal. That is illegal, actually. That is counter federal law. If you're in the country illegally, you are eligible for deportation. And I don't care what your sex is, male or female, or what your age is, young or old. If you're in the country illegally, you're eligible for deportation. Not to mention, we have 300,000 missing children that were trafficked by the cartels and the smugglers, both in Mexico and in the U.S. And our U.S. government facilitated the human trafficking operation. The largest human trafficking operation in American history happened when Biden permitted his government and his agents to transport children to their smugglers in Atlanta, Chicago, New York, and L.A. Upwards of 300,000 children that we don't know where they are. And they're supposed to be in America. Which, that in of itself, is criminal. And so Tom Holman says no one's off the table, which is good. No one should be off the table. And so President Trump is rocking and rolling. Another thing he did is he placed on administrative leave every single DEI agency and department in the entire federal government. Every single federal employee that worked within a diversity, equity, and inclusion department within the entire federal bureaucracy under every single agency was placed on administrative leave, effective as of this evening, I believe at 5 p.m.
And having been around that, that's merely a stopgap measure.
Correct.
Because what they need to do is agency by agency figure out what the retirement packages will be.
Yes.
Separation benefits, transfer, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah, absolutely. Offering them, they'll have priority hiring to other government agencies that will still remain intact.
Yes.
But for the most part, these agencies that got those notices will end up being disbanded. At least those divisions in
yes.
those agencies will be disbanded.
Yes. And folks, this is unfortunately, this is how you have to do it. Okay. Firing federal employees is very challenging. It's very difficult. It's not impossible, but it's very challenging, very costly, very difficult. And the fake whistleblower complaints and the fake appeals and all that litigation involved is very costly, very time-consuming. And so what President Trump's doing here is he's learned his lesson about how do you get rid of federal employees that you don't want around. Well, the first thing you do is you place them on paid administrative leave. All right? There is no damage to them done. Talking about the federal employees. So they can't sue. They can't file a complaint. There's no standing for them to appeal. They're getting told to go on vacation, basically. But they're not damaging our government anymore. That's the point, okay? The damage, the bleeding is stopped when you place these woke agencies and these woke departments on paid administrative leave immediately. Their access credentials to the federal government are immediately rescinded while they are on paid administrative leave. That's a fact. It's actually in the memo. No email access, no building access, etc. Zero authority to do anything, all right? But there's no recourse for them, which is beautiful, okay? And to Bobby's point, some of them, eventually, most of them will probably be disbanded, transferred, moved, retired, etc. So President Trump's team knows exactly what they're doing, and they're doing it quickly. We'll be back in a few.
This is At the Core on American Family Radio with your host, Walker Wildman.
Welcome back to The Core here on American Family Radio. Glad to have you with us today. The show is hosted each week by myself and Rick Green, or to be more proper, Rick Green and I, which is what my grandmother taught me. Rick Green and I host the show each week here on American Family Radio. At the Core is the name of the program. You can find the podcast on all your favorite podcast platforms. Before we jump to our next guest, to continue our discussion of the Trump administration, education policy, the anti-Trump movement, even within the teachers' unions, etc. Before we move to that topic, I want to remind you that the Culture Warrior film is available over at culturewarrior.movie. I've got the DVD here in studio, Culture Warrior, Don Wildman and the Battle for Decency is the film. It's available now at culturewarrior.movie. You can watch it online, of course, right? It's 2025. You can watch it online. But if you want the DVD, that's good too. That's cool too. We got the DVD for you. So all of that can be ordered at culturewarrior.movie. Please check it out. Spread it far and wide. It's more than just the story of Don Wildman, my grandfather. It's more than just the story of AFA. But it really takes you back to the early days of the culture war in America. Takes you back to the days of Ronald Reagan, D. James Kennedy, Jerry Falwell, the Moral Majority. I mean, it's just a lot of fascinating history dating back 40 to 50 years. So go there, culturewarrior.movie, check that out, and order your Culture Warrior kit, which includes the DVD. All right, Ryan Staley's with us. He's a researcher over at Parents Defending Education. He's with us now to talk about the National Educators Association. Ryan, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Well, Ryan, we can't be surprised, but you guys covered in recent weeks this meeting by the National Educators Association, which for some time now has been a very liberal association, which truly doesn't represent the vast majority of public educators out there. But nonetheless, tell us a little bit about this meeting and how they were even prepping for how to combat Trump in education. Tell us about it.
Yeah, they were running a webinar, a series of them actually, about four of them that we were able to capture and dig through. And these were run actually by not even current educators. They have a student teacher NEA association, and that was run by them. So we're, you know, a lot of the individuals on this call are not even current educators. They're training the next generation of educators to already, you know, jump in. And so of course, naturally they're going to start with things like a land acknowledgement to kick things off, and then they go in from there. So you know, what we saw is the same stuff that we've known for a long time. You know, they're basically prepping them to be activists from inside the classroom for far left ideologies. They spoke about LGBT issues and how to protect their LGBT students. In fact, they use a lot of language that bothers me personally, where they talk about our kids. In fact, you know, and some of them are not even in the classroom, let alone it's not even their children. So, you know, that's the gist of it. I mean, it's really kind of simple, but I think it's also validating in that there's, hey, we thought we knew this stuff, and here it is. And this, yeah, this is what they're doing.
Well, yeah. And to your point, it's not new that the NEA is liberal. And it's not new that they're woke and they're wanting to indoctrinate our children on things that you and I don't believe in, but it is new that they decided it would be a great idea to host multiple webinars on how to counter Trump, which is like, you guys are supposed to be like a union, a lobbying organization, and where you work with both sides of the aisle to do what's best for your members and for your constituents, and in this case, it's teachers and students. But instead of doing that, which is very common for associations and unions, instead of doing that, they've gone all anti-Trump, which is like, how on earth are you going to get anything done with the Trump administration when you're hosting webinars on how to combat Trump? And Trump's actually a master negotiator. So if you're wanting to get some out of the administration, you know, you would probably want to cozy up to Trump. But instead, they're bashing Trump.
In fact, they talk about teaching and educating our children like zero times. So it's not even, you know, an organization that calls itself the National Education Association. And I mean, we know these things, right? They're not about the kids. I mean, the NEA president from a number of years ago even said that they're not about the kids. They're about power and advancing their ideology. And, you know, President Becky Pringle, who's on a different webinar that'll come out soon, has said very much the same thing, but went a step further and said, it's not just about that. It's now about transforming the entire system, transforming it to a far left advancing tool, right? Activism and stuff. And you know, one of the other things that comes out in these webinars is they talk about how the ACLU has their back if they want to go and they want to protest. And we've seen that a lot in the last couple of years, where these school districts are not even educating our children; they're out in the street. You know, protesting for new contracts, but what's in those contracts? We've seen that in Portland, LA, Chicago, where they want all these things for, you know, like housing for the homeless and all kinds of crazy things. And so I think people need to understand that these teachers unions, they're in education and teachers in name only. And really what they are is they're now completely a far left political operative tool.
Yes. And in one of the webinars, they actually talked about having pride flags in the classroom, trans flags in the classroom, BLM flags in the classroom. And they're talking about how they're cozying up to the ACLU to ensure that they can carry out their protest and their woke garbage in America's public schools. Let me ask you this. Once again, we're talking to Ryan Staley. He's a researcher over at Parents Defending Education. Ryan, what are you guys thinking on As far as what to do with the Department of Education, I mean, this is obviously a federal agency. It's set up by Congress. So if you want to completely disband it, it has to be gone through Congress. But as far as immediate action steps that can be, you know, fixed under the Trump administration, what are some things maybe you guys are just keeping an eye on?
Well, we're definitely keeping an eye on how districts react. We've spent a lot of time in the last couple of years filing things, Office of Civil Rights complaints. And obviously in the past administration, they just kind of laughed at us and said, yeah, you know, okay, thanks for the input, and then just moved on. But we are going to come back full force with those things because, you know, one of the things that is very encouraging for us is that in the first Trump administration, there were not, if any, very many groups like ours out there watching education. And so now we have a whole slew of us that are across the country looking at our districts. We've already highlighted all the issues. And so really a lot of this is going to be the Department of Education working with groups to say, okay, you know, like us pointing out, look at this, look at this, look at this. And really, just enforcing civil rights law would be a great first start. Honestly, these districts are across the country are running. They're hiring based on race. We've highlighted that in reports. Yes. They're running groups based on race. We've highlighted that and filed OCR complaints there, et cetera, et cetera. Go down the line. You know, we highlight $1 billion from grant funding that went to these type of DEI practices. Let's pull that money back if we can. You know, and really, really tackle the things that low-hanging fruit first, right? And kind of snowball it down. And I think eventually what you're going to see is a lot of districts are going to back off of these things. The districts in the deep blue cities and deep blue states are going to double down. The unions, obviously, we can tell right now from what we're talking about, the unions are going to double and triple down. But I would say, you know, that's what we would like to see from early stages of the Department of Ed. How about we just enforce civil rights law? That'd be something easy to start with.
Absolutely. And I've seen you guys, I mean, y'all have filed multiple complaints. I mean, I'm just looking at one from a week ago. That was filed over Middletown, this is in Indianapolis, Middletown City School District in Middletown, I'm sorry, Ohio. But this, so these are important because, the Department of Education and the Office of Civil Rights within the DOJ and the EEOC, they've got to have these reports that you guys are putting in order to take action to be made aware of these issues. So what you guys are doing is very important work. Ryan, tell our audience just one more minute or two. Tell our audience about your organization that you work for and how they can find out more about your work.
Yeah, Parents Defending Education, they can go to defendinged.org. And what we do is we will file lawsuits and OCR complaints, et cetera. Example, we filed a lawsuit against the Biden administration for Title IX. You know, my job and some of the things we do is we expose these things. We file Freedom of Information Acts, and then we work with the media to get them out there. And then we have another branch that works with parent groups and parents to go out and to empower the parents inside their communities. And so if you need help or need information or want to connect with us, you can do that at our website.
All right, Ryan. Hey, thanks so much for coming on the program. Keep up the good work.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
All right. Absolutely. That's Parents Defending Education. Spokesperson and representative there, Ryan Staley. And they're exposing a lot of this woke garbage in our public schools. They're working at the state and local level and also filing formal complaints with various agencies when discrimination occurs due to DEI and woke policies around the country. Moving on to a couple of the stories I want to make sure we get to before we wrap up this segment. Let me just read through some of these executive orders. This is just a few. Okay, so this is non-exhaustive. President Trump declared a national emergency on the border. President Trump declared the end of birthright citizenship, which goes to the 14th Amendment, which is going to be litigated. But President Trump's right on this. Just because a child is born in this country by an illegal immigrant doesn't make them automatically a citizen. That's been standard practice. Supreme Court's tried to stray away from it. They won't provide clear answers and clarity on it. But when you look at the 14th Amendment, you look at America's founding, you look at the statutes throughout the last 200 years, none of it in any way insinuates or articulates that illegal immigrants are included in that, included in the 14th Amendment. That's just not true. This goes back to Dred Scott. This goes back to slavery. It was never intended to be used for an invasion, well, which is what's happening, or for illegal immigrants to have babies here as soon as they cross the border, and then boom, all of a sudden you're a citizen. That's just not what was intended by the 14th Amendment and by the federal statutes on this topic. Now, if Congress wants to make it that way, where all you have to do is step 1 foot across the Rio Grande Valley and boom, your child's a citizen, then they can weigh in on that, although that's a bad idea. But current law and current constitutional statutes on this and amendments are not supposed to be interpreted in the way that they have been interpreted in the past several decades. So that's that. President Trump ended catch and release, reinstated remain in Mexico policy. By the way, remain in Mexico is very important because it permits the immediate deportation of anyone who tries to claim asylum without claiming it first in Mexico. So that's happening now. As I mentioned, the cartels are now foreign terrorist organizations. Active troops are being currently deployed to the southern border. Lastly, and most importantly, this one was beautiful. Within minutes of President Trump being sworn in, the Department of Homeland Security disabled the CBP1 app. All right, this is important. This was a human smuggling application designed and built by our own government to expedite the human smuggling operation of the cartels on our southern border. And that's, I'm not exaggerating things and I'm not putting colorful words on things. These are facts. Our government built an app, a mobile app, to ensure that illegal immigrants and human smugglers and human traffickers were able to use this app to set up appointments to cross the border illegally so they could be led into America. You can't make this stuff up. Our government was allowing illegal immigrants preemptively to set appointments in which they would tell the agents which time they were going to cross the border. I mean, does this not make you want to, like, I don't know, we don't need to be violent, but does it not make you just want to go outside and, like, I don't know, just yell into the air, like, what are you guys thinking? Are you kidding me? We had a mobile application that the government operated in which illegal immigrants could tell the government, our government, what time they're going to break federal law, and our agents would meet them at the border and shake their hand and process them. What? Absolute insanity. Anybody who participated in that should be fired. Whoever's idea this was and whoever was the architect of the CB1 app should be terminated. Or, if you want to be more immediate and expeditious, place them on permanent administrative leave, effective immediately. So, President Trump ended the CB1 app, and by the way, 30,000 illegal immigrants had their appointments canceled. And tears were being shed across the river and across from El Paso. And it's a beautiful sight. Law and order is back, my friends. Meet Kelsey. When she found out she was pregnant, she wasn't sure where to turn. But after meeting with the counselors at a preborn network clinic who loved and supported her, and after hearing her baby's heartbeat on a free ultrasound, she chose life.
When a mother looks at her child through a sonogram, it does something to you. You know, I ended up deciding to keep my son, who is now 5 years old today. He's amazing. He brings absolute joy to my heart. I could not imagine life without him. Not only did they help me save his life, they saved my life.
By introducing a woman to her baby on ultrasound, a baby's chance of life doubles. If you have the means, would you consider a leadership gift to save babies in a big way? Your tax-deductible donation of $5,000 will sponsor Preborn's entire network for 24 hours, helping to rescue 200 babies. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 on your phone and then say the keyword baby. Or you can donate securely at preborn.com. That's preborn.com.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.